So, folks, welcome to the Slow Pokes podcast.
Yeah!
This is a very special episode.
Yes!
Because we need to tell John why drugs are bad. No, this is...
I mean, someone does need... No, no. I know why they're bad. He says...
We need to have a conversation about bullying. The reason this episode is a bit of fun for John and I is that it's episode 12. And this is what we consider to be our sort of our minimum.
Arbitrary minimum.
Yeah, this is what we wanted to reach, yeah. Right? We always said when we started this podcast, we wanted to get to at least, quote, a season. And 12 episodes sounded like a good number for that.
And it is an arbitrary number, but like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, but here we are. This is it. This is episode 12. So I want to start the show by saying thank you to all the people who have listened and shared and everything. I know that we are still very much a small...
It was subversive.
Yeah. We're a niche market. Now, I understand that we're... You know, yeah, I don't want to sound like
I'm... The niches are friends.
I don't want to sound like I'm resting on my laurels. It's like, we did it. We made it. We're successes. But we've made something that both John and I are quite proud of.
Yep.
And part of the reason that we're proud of it is because there are people who find it worthwhile, like repeatedly worthwhile. And that's very rewarding. So we're feeling good about ourselves. And I wanted to pass that good feeling on to the people who help make me feel good about myself.
I will take that mantle, and I will also help make people feel good.
I'll pay it forward, basically. Emotional currency forward.
Yeah, I think it was really helpful for both of us to be like, oh, let's set a reasonable goal. Let's have like a, you know, let's not do a daily podcast. Let's not go nuts. Let's just do something manageable that we can start and we can just get done. And it's great that people like it. And I hope that you do. And I hope that it adds something. Like that from this experience that we all grow.
Yeah.
Whether that's creatively or emotionally or just laughing at us being dumb and yelling about juice.
Yeah, or if someone listens to this podcast and goes, huh, I'm smarter than these guys. Good for you. Well done.
Make a thing.
Yeah, make something.
Make a thing. Prove us how silly we are.
Yeah. Make that condescending, entitled elitist podcast.
Give
someone
us a
cut. Listen to it.
Like, it's fine. You know, we'll never get upset.
We're joking around a bit here, but thank you, I guess is what we're saying.
Yep.
This is awesome. We feel good. So I wanted to make sure everybody knew it.
It's a very nice thought, David.
Yeah. Well, today, though, we are here to talk about a video game because this is the Slow Pokes podcast.
Yep.
And games are right now
What we do right now.
I'm very excited for today's game.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my... I don't want to say it's one of my favorites. It's definitely one of my favorite narrative-based games.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an exemplary example of comedy in games,
which is
an underutilized mechanism in games.
Yeah, I feel like it was like adventure games in the 90s and then not comedy. And then this.
Yeah. And like you get the occasional things. I don't want to like, because you said adventure games in the 90s, but you know, there have been Psychonauts and things like that that have a certain energy and a certain comedy to them. But it is rarer than it should be, I think. And I'm really glad that this game came along and is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in front of a keyboard. Today's game is Tales from the Borderlands.
Tales from the Borderlands. Oh, I've played some Telltale games before, and I have played, but never finished in the true Slowpoke fashion, the Borderlands games, 1 and 2. Actually, we played through some of Borderlands 2.
Yeah, co-op. 90% of what I've played in Borderlands 2 has been co-op with my slow partner in crime.
100% of what I played in Borderlands 2 was with my slow partner in crime.
I played a fair bit with Michael as well. He's a good co-op buddy.
Yeah.
When his microphone fucking works.
Whoa, David, sit back down.
I'm sorry, everyone. I would like to apologize for the outburst.
Don't worry, we've got many chairs. It's fine, you broke it.
I think that it's important that when things like this happen, people take responsibility for them. So, Michael, I will be expecting you to do that by our next episode.
Great, thanks, David. But you played this one, obviously.
Yes, and I played it as it came out.
Yep.
So, very, very, pretty much immediately.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't. I saw this game and I always wanted to play it, but I just never got to it.
Mm.
But you walked into this with high praise. Like, you were gun swinging, arms up.
Yeah, it was. So, I'm a huge fan of Telltale. And part of the reason I think that I responded so well to Tales from the Borderlands is that it was concurrent with their Game of Thrones series. And I started, like, episodes 1 through 4 of their Game of Thrones series, I was very, very happy with. I felt like I was in the universe. I felt like things were going well. And I felt like, you know, it's nice to be empowered with some of the decisions. Like, you know, there's like, you know, when you watch an episode of Game of Thrones, it's like, oh, why did they do this? Why they should have done this? And you get to do the smart thing.
You get to be the person.
Yeah, you get to be the person and make the decisions. And there was something very good about that. The last two episodes of it, I did not like. I don't want to talk about why because there are a couple of spoilers, but there was some stuff where they didn't appropriately set some stuff up that was revealed towards the end of it and things like that. It was just a bit of a mess and it left me feeling quite down.
I haven't played, so it'd be
Tales.
Just you talking about it.
Tales from the Borderlands, however, I felt ended very appropriately for what it is. And like I said, it's a very clever game, very, very funny, a very, very positive energy, a bizarrely good level of characterization. It's just a very, very good game of that genre and of that kind. So yes, I definitely did walk into this with high praise.
I mean, that's pretty much... So like, that's kind of what I was expecting. I heard from a lot of people that... I've read articles about Tales from the Borderlands and it's kind of been like people going, oh no, if you're feeling a bit left out with the Telltale games... jump into Tales from the Borderland because it's really fun.
Yeah.
And it's just a great example of what they can do with the medium of episodic otherworld story
with
games.
With their habit of licensing stuff into episodic, story-driven, technically adventure games.
And like, honestly, I look at all the games Telltale released and they've released a lot of games.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of them are very good.
Yeah. But I played season 1 of The Walking Dead, which was their... It was sort of like... They'd been making games before, but this was like when they came in vogue.
Yeah, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One is because it's The Walking Dead, so everybody was paying attention. Two, it is a stellar story that they tell. It's very, very good. I'm not much in The Walking Dead, but it's a really, really good thing. Third, it's where they transitioned from the more traditional adventure game where you had an inventory and you had to solve puzzles to something that was more akin to a choose-your-own-adventure interactive narrative, which was far more about character interactions and
story
dialogue choices and
less about puzzles.
Yeah, there's very, very few puzzles in it. And so that's where they moved into the thing that they're doing now.
Yeah, totally. And I got into this thing because of the way they release their games episodically and they're always kind of delayed and a bit finicky with timing. I'd always get in this habit of I'd play the first one, then I'd wait, and then the new one would come out, and I would have forgotten the first one. So I'd play them both, and I'm just like replaying and playing the game. I think, again, like with Mass Effect, where I played the start like 5 times.
Yeah.
Right? I've played the first 2 episodes of The Wolf Among Us like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And I still haven't finished it. I just kind of really burn out to the end. So I was kind of interested to sit down and be like, this is one of the really great ones.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit here. I'm going to give it a play. I'm going to see what it's like. Because everyone says it's great.
Yeah. And there's that comment of like, this is a great place to come into it. I completely agree with that because Walking Dead, the season 1 of Walking Dead is the only one of theirs I've played. It's very good. But it does require emotional energy. I don't want to say harrowing, but it is a trying experience emotionally.
In fitting with the theme of The Walking Dead, which is not an easy experience sometimes, it can be difficult and emotional.
Yeah, whereas this is fun with a capital F, and also the other letters are capital as well, and there are 3 exclamation points after it.
Yeah.
It is a very colourful, fun game.
Then everyone starts exploding.
Yeah,
and then there's money.
And so this is really interesting as well, because we're going to be talking about this game on its own merits, but it's worth mentioning it is a licensed universe.
That's
like,
kind of the
like
thing.
Most of what they do.
Pretty much everything they're doing right now. Do they make any original IP?
I think Sam and Max was licensed. Am I wrong in saying that?
That would sound like a qualified person would know the answer to.
Yeah.
But I'll not.
Throw something up on the description or whatever, or a comment that clarifies that afterwards. But I can't think of an unambiguous game that they've done that is not a licensed property.
Yeah.
They do that incredibly well in most cases. And like, for example, Fables, you were talking about Wolf Among Us. Fables was a series I was interested in for a while.
A comic book series?
Yeah, a comic book series that I was into for a while, yeah. It kind of lost me because the scope of it totally changed and they lost what pulled me in initially. Whereas when Telltale did their Wolf Among Us, they said it, during the time that I found the
most interesting.
Most interesting for the comic series, right? So I think they understand what it is that's appealing about what it is they license.
Mm.
And they capture that very well. Back to the Future, I was very impressed with that.
And boy, do they capture it here.
Yes, they really do.
They grab it by the collar, they shake it around, and they wear its skin.
And it's bizarre to say this. I feel like they understand it so well that they do it better than Borderlands itself. I think they do some of the stuff that Gearbox is trying to do with Borderlands better than Borderlands do.
Yeah, unfortunately, Borderlands as a game is not really a well-crafted mechanism for telling story and narrative,
yeah,
because it is just a greased shoot of gun violence.
It's basically a fun veneer over a grind.
Yes, yes.
You know, and that's awesome. That's what I said there was not meant to be deprecating in any way. Like,
Borderlands makes it fun to pick up a gun with slightly better numbers than the one you just had. Or make the decision that's like, oh, this gun's better, but when I shoot it, it goes pew, pew, pew. And the gun I have now goes.
So, yeah, the tone of Borderlands, at least Borderlands 2, I've not played Borderlands 1, but the tone of Borderlands 2 is captured very, very well in this. And you can't talk about Tales from the Borderlands without talking about tone. They do a lot of stuff that helps solidify that or make it clear what the tone is going to be early on. And I think one of the things I was the most sort of like invigorated and the moment where I was playing it and going, fuck yes, I'm going to love this. This is going to be great, is when that first title sequence comes up, right? So Borderlands is... So let's talk about Gearbox and how they do shit for a little bit.
Okay.
There's two things that Gearbox love. Licensed music intros.
Yes.
And dubstep.
And they probably love dubstep a little too much.
Yeah.
That relationship is potentially hazardous.
It is nice to see, though, that there was someone in the world who wasn't just shitting on dubstep when dubstep was a part of the conversation.
that's true. Gearbox genuinely loves dubstep.
Yeah, and that's nice. It's nice to see that they're not ashamed of that.
Positivity in the things you love is important. Like, some of us love just terrible things.
Yeah.
But yes, they do.
Okay, so I don't know if I'm a fan of dubstep technically, but a guy at work who goes to a whole bunch of music stuff and has dreads, and so you know he knows a lot about music.
Yeah.
I was talking to him about dubstep once, and I said, I think I'd like dubstep if it was less angry and more happy. And he's said straight up, just gone, glitch. I'm going, what? It's a glitch. The genre you like is called glitch.
Oh.
And I listened to glitch, and it's good.
Yes.
It is a good genre. I really like it. But
let's not dwell
too heavily.
There's a part of me that wants to just start talking about music and like, and it's like my love of metal.
Yeah.
Whole other time to talk about that. If you want us to talk about that, please let us know.
Yeah. Anyway, no, I'd gladly talk about music.
I do love the fact they use licensed music in their games.
Yeah.
It was my favorite start to the original Borderlands and even Borderlands 2 when a game goes, hey, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then a really good, like, it's like a great like pop or punk or rock song comes on and something happens and you just...
This is a great example of what I feel is more done better in Tales from the Borderlands than any of the Borderlands games I've played, right? So in Borderlands 2, you have the start where you're on the train and they have their licensed music pick there and it's like the camera kind of turns around. It's sort of a pre-rendered thing, so it's a little bit washed out.
Yeah.
And the animation isn't perfect. And I know I feel like I'm being very nitpicky here, but when you compare the choice of music and the kind of action that's taking place, the cinematography, the dynamicness of the camera, all that kind of thing, if Borderlands 2 to episode 1 of Tales from the Borderlands, leagues apart in my mind. Like, I think that Tales from the Borderlands just does it so much better, and there's direction to it, right? Like, when you have the opening of Borderlands 2, you're on a train, it gets attacked, oop, you're in the snow, go for a walk. But in this, it's like, you know, it's the first time Reese and Vaughn are coming down to Pandora, they've stolen a car, so there's like a
crescendo?
Crescendo, yeah. There's a crescendo of emotion that's basically going on, and like they have a goal, and the way they time it.
It's handled really well. The pacing's really great. It's just like, we're both just like thumbs up.
Yeah. And like they do the thing where like they have beats in the music timed with actions that occur in the sequence
Think everyone would do.
Yeah, which doesn't really quite land in the Borderlands, the proper Borderlands 2 stuff.
Yeah, even in Borderlands 1, I'd agree.
Yeah, it's and like, God, it's like, the amount of times I've just sat down and listened to just the music, like, there are playlists on YouTube or whatever of just those five songs and the finale song, and like, it just, because it just brings back so many positive emotions. And
every time a new licensed song came in the game,
yeah,
I would turn my headphones up, get my phone, activate like SoundHound, sample the song so I could listen to it later because I'm just like, oh no, this is a good jam. This is good jams.
Like I said, it's very cinematic, you know, like they do it very, very well. And I'm a huge sucker for the anchored titles thing that they do.
Oh, the splash.
Yeah, it's they like, have the
characters introduced.
Yeah, there's that. I'm a huge sucker for that. But in these opening sequences where, like, you know, you've got the music playing and there'll be like perhaps a vehicle driving forward in the scene and the title for the game is like anchored to that model in the environment, it's all very, it makes the titles feel very present, and there's, I'm a huge sucker for that.
You're just talking about fonts you like now.
Yeah, basically. And GTA 4 did it, and I was a huge sucker for it for back in whatever that was, 2008, 2009.
Totally. No, I get that. They have a real sense of style.
Yeah.
That captures the idea of the Borderlands games and the visual art. And they do it expertly well.
Yeah.
And not only that, but they also get like the character and world building stuff of like Borderlands.
Yeah, like it
spot
just
on.
Communicates everything. Like these little moments, I know that I'm harping on about them, but when you have these starts to the games, you're like, yeah, I'm here, I'm ready to rock and roll. Like I am ready to do Borderlands. I know what I'm about to feel.
And throughout the whole game, right, there's never a moment where you wouldn't think that would happen on Pandora, in Borderlands. Like all the jokes, all the characters sort of beats, the story arcs. I feel like all the kind of everything that happens in the story, it feels very appropriate to the setting.
Yeah.
And like, and the reason why like that impresses me so much is it is another studio handling someone else's work. And it's like when a musician covers a song and just kind of everyone kind of goes, nah, that's like they should have always done it. I feel like to me, it's like the world that they've created, they did such a great job. And it's just the jokes and the characters you meet and just the environment is like always something I wanted to have fun with. But in the Borderlands actual games, you're interfacing with the world via shooting things, and that kind of limits all the fun you can have.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's only so much opportunity for dialogue and jokes in a game like that. There's visual humor and things, but a lot of the time, I feel like it's extremeness, extremity, I guess, maybe.
It's like people getting brutalized or violence occurring.
Like the first time you meet Ellie in Borderlands 2. Is it Ellie? The
Tiny Tina?
No, not Tiny Tina. I'm talking about Scooter's cousin.
Yes.
The first time you meet her, she's crushing a bandit to death in a car crusher.
Yep.
And it's like, I'm not saying that that's not funny. Like, I get it. But a lot of it is that. Because you said Tiny Tina, a very similar introduction to that character.
Yeah.
Meet her, she blows someone up with dynamite. You know, a lot of it is just, he is a crazy violent person.
Yeah. He's kind of one note.
Yeah. Whereas I feel this gives a lot more room to people who fall in the middle, you know?
It adds color. You know? Borderlands set up a very good, you know, outline. But then if it tells of the Borderlands, you get to...
What's the name of the trope? A Lower Deck episode? Where like, you know, in Star Trek, you've got the main crew up on the bridge. But then you'll have a Lower Deck episode where it's just like, some of the engineering team having to deal with the shit that the captain's up to. I feel like they capture that as well, that you believe that there are people in the world like Zero and like Athena who are that powerful, and you don't doubt their ability, but you never feel like you can do what they do, you know?
Even as these are
titans and you're...
Even as the game ends, you still don't feel on par.
Yeah.
You know, there's a Colossi walking through the world. It's all very fantasy and like a bit heavy-handed at times with like Athena and Pandora and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's
the use of comedy is really interesting in this. There are lots of games out there that are funny, you know, in at least intention. Like, I don't know, what's the thing I said before the show? Saints Row?
Yes.
There's a bunch of games that are silly, but they don't really... They're not really witty. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. I think wit does kind of require dialogue, and this game is full of dialogue, and there's so many intelligent uses of it. Like, it's difficult to overstate how clever some of these lines are.
Yeah, and the setup and the delivery.
Yeah.
And not only how well they're written, but that they fit into the world, and you never really...
Yeah.
There's never a joke that's just a good joke on its
just
own.
Just generically, yeah. It requires characterization, and it requires, like, an understanding of what Pandora is and stuff like that.
Even the basics. But, yeah, it's always working into the world. So you never feel jarred out of it. The humor never comes out of nowhere. It's always just... well-paced.
One of the things I really love that they do in this as well is they're very self-aware, because Telltale, it's unique. This game is unique in the way that Telltale is just established enough as Telltale to be making jokes about themselves within this game.
I think when this came out, they'd already, released the first season of The Walking Dead?
It was first season of Walking Dead. They'd done The Wolf Among Us was also out. Season 2 and... of Walking Dead and what's the other thing?
Game of Thrones
were concurrent with this to some level, which is why this game took like almost a year to release between episode 1 and episode 5.
Yeah, you wrote down that it took 330 days.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's too long. I understand that there were probably business decisions about prioritizing the more recognizable properties,
reasonable decisions.
I think this is the best thing they've ever done, and so it's kind of sucks that it took that long for it to come out. But they had done a lot of stuff before this, and they'd done like a mini run of Walking Dead as well. So people knew who Telltale were, and they knew how Telltale operated.
They also kind of use a language and system in their games, like the way they tell their games.
Yeah.
Like they had just kind of really set up this kind of like the way conversations happen, the way you choose dialogue, the way you move around the world.
Mm. And so
people remembering things.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to get at. We're at a point in time when this came out in late 2014 where players can be expected to understand the tropes of how Telltale presents stuff. They play around with that. And sometimes it's very clever, sometimes it's a little bit easier. But one of the fun things they do is you mentioned the tool tips that come up with, like, you know...
People remembering things.
Jake will remember that when you say something to give you this sense of, like, foreshadowing.
You gave a candy bar to a child. David will remember that.
Yeah, and like, oh, you sided with this character instead of this one. They will remember that. So that's their thing, and they play around with that a lot. Like, there's a point early on where Reese gets hit in the face, and the tooltip that comes up is your face will remember that.
Yes.
There's a few other things, like there's a point where it's not really a spoiler, but you can pick a flower on a plant that's kind of very luminescent and stuff like that, and you've got the option to pick the flower or don't pick the flower. And as a player, you clearly know that something's going to happen if you pick this plant, and the tooltip that comes up at the top is, go ahead, pick a flower, which I thought was very funny when I read that.
When I read that, I immediately went into the settings menu and turned it off. Because sometimes jokes don't land for you, and I found all of this self-referential humor now in 2017 to not be funny.
Yeah,
There's an option in the menu. I just turned off those tooltips.
Yeah, I feel like you were missing out because those examples I gave are very obvious ones, but there are others that are very, very funny. Like
I do feel like there are some really good joke ones there, and they were funny when I went through it. But the amount of times when it just tells you that people remember things, my brain, every time it comes up, I can't help but read text on a screen, and my brain just goes, "You remember that? You did a thing." Like, do you know that they have memory?
That said, did you find... This is just a question of my own curiosity. Did you find it frustrating in Life is Strange where they did the similar thing in that? Where, like, the butterfly comes up to tell you that a decision you just made will have consequences later?
No.
Yeah.
But that's because I can ignore things like butterflies. I feel like it's specifically text because I had to turn this... I was playing with the subtitles. God, this is pedantic and boring. But I was playing with the subtitles. I had to turn them off because I would stop looking at the characters and I would just read... I have a habit of reading just the subtitles and not looking at the scene.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just drawn to language. Mm. And when it's just always saying you'll remember... I know people remember things. I get it. And then always has a reaction shot of their face.
Yeah, anyway, and I think it's worth mentioning, I played the first episode of Guardians of the Galaxy, Telltale's Guardians of the Galaxy, like
their
2 or 3 days
game.
Ago, which is, like, literally only came out, like, 3 or 4 days ago.
As we record this podcast.
And in that, they default both the subtitles and the consequence tooltips to be off. So part of it, I think, is the fact that they've grown to a point where they realize that trope is tired, and that's why it's being mocked in this, is because they know the trope is tired in this particular game. The other thing, too, though, is that the quality of the facial animation stuff in Guardians of the Galaxy is much better than it is. Maybe not much better, but definitely better. And they are able to have a bit more nuance in character reactions and things that don't require you to be told that the characters have memories.
So if I was to compare this, I would say that this is better than Mass Effect, right? But not as good as The Last of Us. Yeah, this is like I think that this is kind of fine. It does enough. And then admittedly, they do have some specific code kind of things. Sometimes it's not interesting to look at a conversation.
Yeah.
But what they say is always interesting.
Yeah, it really is.
And like the people, all the voice acting is just great.
Yeah, we should probably start talking about characters now, hey. Yeah. So this was the point where we decided we were going to drop the spoiler warning. Mm-hmm. Up to this point, it's been very vague. We're not going to talk too much about the plot of this game because it's not super relevant to why we enjoy it.
Also, Telltale is kind of like known for having decisions and things like that, but I honestly just feel like talking about them would be just us saying,
like patting ourselves on the back or whatever.
What did you do? Oh, I didn't do that. Oh, cool. And, you know,
there are a couple of interesting decisions that might come up, and I the reason we're giving the spoiler warning now is because I want to have the freedom to talk about plot as it relates to different characters and stuff like that. So we're moving into characters now. Just in case you are about to leave us because you want to play this game spoiler-free, it is a great game. You are making the right decision to play it. I would recommend this to basically anyone, and because it's a Telltale game, there's a very low barrier to entry based on skill.
You could play this game on your iPad. You can play it on your TV.
Yeah.
You can play console. It's pretty much out on everything.
Yeah.
I would also recommend that, jump in and play it. Totally, though, jump in the lounge room, play it on a pad. Have a great time.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like it's a great game to sit on the lounge and just
play. We might talk about some of the annoyances that keyboards have that controllers don't when playing a game like this, but that's all beyond the point. Right now, we're going to talk about characters. For those of you who are leaving us, thank you for joining us this far. Thanks once again for getting us to episode 12.
We always enjoy your company.
Characters. Now.
Okay, characters.
So there's a whole bunch of characters in this game.
Nice. Great. It's a great start.
I know that sounds very stupid, but like when you're talking about The Last of Us, right, as an example, you've got like five characters that are of very significant relevance.
That's true.
I was listing the characters for our rundown here, and it doesn't even fit on one page. There's just too fucking many of them. And they're all great. Yeah. They're all great.
And I think as we were thinking about this, and I was looking back, I was kind of like, wow, there's like a really good gender balance of characters in this game.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I didn't notice until after the game was finished, and I thought back on it. It's just like, oh, you know, how did they do with representation? And the gender balance is, I don't want to say it's perfect because it's not, but as far as the characters that have names and dialogue, it's pretty fucking good. Like, I think there's one extra man in that core cast.
Totally. But even like the background characters, you will see and hear female bandits and female, like just men and women. Like, it's good. It was just nice.
Yeah.
It was like,
oops. That's all right. I don't think that was too loud. John.
I'm sorry, Dave.
But no, you're right. Like where they're able to do a better gender balance, they do it. So a lot of Valerie and August's group is pretty much a even gender split, whereas the psychos are all dudes.
The classic psychos are all dudes.
Like
that specific
type of enemy are all
dudes. It's like a weird Borderland look. It's like all the psychopaths came from the same fashion store.
Yeah,
they all look the same. I think it's
because
like
you've got bandits and then psychos, and a lot of the bandits and the psychos are men, but then you've got Valerie's gang, and that's about 50-50. Yeah. And like I said, all of the named and voice characters, it's a couple more men, I would say, but it's pretty close. So it's very refreshing when you think about it in those terms. There are also people of color that feature in the game. Not a massive amount, but it sounds shitty to pat a game on the back for having at least one, but they have more than one, which is nice.
I think the reason why I want to point it out is it's just great characters, and it's just a diverse. You get to hear just a diverse range of characters, and it's just great to see that. And I always want to be like, look how easy and great
it's not even hard. Like I didn't even notice.
Admittedly, you have to be able to write characters in the first place, so that might be hard.
Yeah,
but if you can write characters, like
and this again, we come back to it as well. Something that this game does much better than typical Borderlands does is make the people characters, right? When you play as the Vault Hunters, at least in Borderlands 2, there's not really a lot to them. In the pre-sequel,
one is worse.
In the pre-sequel, they work a little bit harder to make Athena a character and to make you know, Claptrap or...
The Vault Hunters.
Yeah, the Vault Hunters.
Characters you can choose from. Yeah.
But it is still relatively limited. Whereas in this, you get very, very strong senses of character from the beginning. And so you've got Reese and Vaughn, and they have a very... So you've got Reese is one of your player characters. Vaughn is like his sidekick. They have a very... clear relationship from the first conversation that they have with one another. Yeah, and there's totally. A clear dynamic. And the way they use dialogue to characterize the people and reveal stuff about them. And,
their motivations, and, their way of operating, how they think.
And hint that they have lives before we as the players met them and all that kind of thing.
And plans and aspirations.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got a lot of this stuff for characters that aren't the player characters as well. So you've got Reese and Vaughn as one set of player characters and Fiona and her young sister, Sasha, as the other set, right? Yep. And like you say, Fiona and Sasha both have real goals and real aspirations, and they have a capacity without being Mary Sue's about them. I hate that hand wave criticism of a lot of stuff, but I would not describe anybody in this game as being unrealistically capable, as far as...
within the realms of a world where everything is solved with violence and people are obsessed with finding guns.
Yeah. Like, it's very, like, grounded, and they have a lot of good character moments. I come back to the dialogue between the characters as well. Like, it isn't just, oh, this person said this because it's funny. Like, it is motivated by character and the shit that they're trying to do. It's just, it's all very, very interesting. But we should probably talk about our favorite characters. Would you like to start, or should I?
No, you start. Like...
So...
So good.
My favorite character in this game is a character called Loaderbot, right?
Such a shock to see, like, to find myself so interested in the robot.
Yeah, right? And so in Borderlands 2, the Loaderbot is like a generic enemy. Like, it's just, there's hundreds and hundreds of them come at you. And in this, you start off with Reese has like a Loaderbot to help protect him.
Yeah.
And all through episode one, I kind of just felt like that was just like, oh, get it? Because it's like Borderlands 2.
Oh, this is a thing. Down,
yeah, this is just
things.
Like in Borderlands 2. You guys remember Borderlands 2? This is based on this Loaderbot. But over the course of the game, he develops into one of the most interesting characters in the whole piece.
And
like I said, he's a generic enemy. And in the beginning, Reese like pilots him.
Yeah.
And they work very, very well at humanizing him throughout the game. By he starts to use sarcasm more and more. He's very condescending to the human characters. And every time there's a conversation between them, it's clear that even though he wants to help them because like they're his friends or whatever, he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
And he is completely capable of surviving without them. They aren't capable of surviving without him. And
honestly, the reason why I love Loaderbot so much is he's just a perfect example of them running with this game.
Yeah,
and just being funny and being true to the world and just going for it.
Some of his one-liners, he's got some of the best one-liners in the game as well. I'm not going to sit here and quote all of them, but he alternates between this dry, condescending wit and these moments of, like, poetic grandeur. Like, there's one point where Reese says, oh, it's been a tough day, huh? And the Loaderbot responds something along the lines of, I can't hold back your tide of terrible decisions. And just like I said, like, that characterizes their dynamic. That, like, even though this Loaderbot is initially was there to basically be under the command of Reese.
It gets really... thinking about free will and robots is a whole thing.
Yeah, but there's this moment where he like mocks Reese's fashion or talks about how Reese is incompetent, is constantly picking up his slack. It really helps you see Loaderbot as this free thinking machine. And there's also a couple of bizarre conversations they have about the nature of free will and robots and stuff like that just kind of go by the by. But absolute surprise character that really just won me over very completely by the end of the game.
The character's great. Like, you get to experience them, you'll understand, they're well written, funny, great. Like, wow. Like, I didn't think that the spark of ideas, the material of Borderlands could produce such interesting characters.
Yeah.
It's vaguely three-dimensional
shapes.
And I think
that's part of why it's so... Like, it's part of why I like this game so much is because it surprised me. You know, I've never been into Borderlands, and then I play this, and now I'm that's what made me want to go play Borderlands 2. You have this character that I expect is just going to be nothing, and he turns into one of the most interesting characters in the piece. You have, like, just this bombastic, ridiculous, balls to the wall kind of stupid world, but there's these great character moments in it as well. Like, there's all these little surprises, and I say little, there's all these massive surprises that just impressed me so much more than what I was expecting, I think, from this game as a whole.
No, it was great. I came into it, like, I wasn't sure what to expect.
Mm.
I mean, I guess it's the best way to come into it, but it was just great fun.
Yeah, so, but do you want to talk about your favorite character now?
Oh, yeah, my favorite character.
Because this is my second favorite character.
So the game is kind of built around this, like, the idea of the characters trying to find...
A vault.
Such a Borderlands thing. The game, everyone's obsessed with vaults. It's like, oh, we're trying to find a secret vault. Wow, great, though. This is like leaning right into the game world. And to do that, they assemble a machine who turns out to be a robot called Gordis.
Yeah, and Gordis is basically a compass towards a vault, basically.
Yeah, but they have a personality, and they are the cutest robot character ever. I think it's immediately what I say when Gordis turns up. I'm like, you're so cute, look at you.
Yeah, that's one of the dialogue options that Fiona has for
little
Gordis.
Little tiny robot eyes, it's adorable.
Yes, and like, so Gordis, you've used the word they a couple of times, I understand why, but Gordis is gendered as she in the game. And so... she's just the absolute cutest little robot that you'll ever see, and she has this childlike enthusiasm that's completely, like, it's just intoxicating, right?
Yeah, especially because it's kind of, the world is devoid of child.
Yeah.
Like everyone's, like, hard world and painful and violence and death.
And it's interesting as well, because there are child characters. You mentioned Tiny Tina and stuff like that. I haven't played all of Borderlands, but this is the first childlike character that isn't psychopathic.
Yes.
That I've met, that isn't, like, damaged by the world in for want of a better term. That hasn't learned from the world, might be a better way to put it.
Definitely.
But Gordis is fucking adorable, and
so cute. Look up a picture of this robot right now.
Yes, look up pictures of Gordis. She is the cutest thing ever. Yep. She's absolutely adorable, but she also serves as a great source of humor in the game,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So, like, she has a certain naivety and a certain enthusiasm that completely juxtaposes the tone of whatever scene you're in, and so that's always very funny.
Always an option to have, like, that non-foil of the... It's like it's foiling the world, not really the characters.
Yeah.
Like, I think you mentioned the game never really punches down.
No, and people. Yeah, we should talk about that as well, but... yeah, Gordis is a very, very innocent source of humor, and there's just the way that plays, and how she and Lotobot have a lot of great interactions. She and Reese and she and Fiona have a lot of great interactions. It's just, she's a really great character. It's worth mentioning as well, she is voiced by Ashley Johnson, who is best known for voicing Ellie in The Last of Us.
That's why that name is important.
Yes.
I had no idea.
Because we talked about this before the show. I thought you'd recognize the name.
No, I'm not a names person.
Yeah,
she's
Ellie from The Last of Us. All of the voice actors in this are very well established, except for Lotobot. He's some sound designer at Gearbox.
Yeah.
But everybody else is pretty well established in the game industry. Laura Bailey is Fiona. Troy Baker is Reese, because, of course. Nolan North also appears in this game as August, who, once again, very surprising character. You have a very simple read of him, but as the game develops, it reveals that he's actually much more intelligent than he pretends to be, and he's much more capable than you would think. But at the same time, like, it's very interesting how his relationship with Valerie, because, like,
who's his mother
and the head of the crime family, who he is very afraid of disappointing because she seems like a very harsh woman.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting to see that when he's not around her, how dangerous he is.
Oh yeah.
But then someone that dangerous and that intelligent and that capable when near his mother, who is tenfold all of that than him, how immediately he becomes, like, how immediately his behavior changes because of his relationship with her. It's really interesting.
The thing for me is, like, when I was playing this game, I was really reminded of some great TV shows that I've watched, you know, and how they tell stories and how they characterize things. Because I feel like there's a lot of parallels in terms of writing.
Yeah.
That the Telltale games in general kind of do. But specifically with Tales from the Borderlands, it is just a really character-driven game.
Mm.
And it just excels. It's just spectacular.
Yeah, it's fucking...
fireworks.
Fucking amazing.
Fireworks in the sky.
You were talking about the lack of punch-down humor. One of the characters, I think a good example of that, is Scooter appears in this, who's a beloved... kind of
touchstone from the original games.
From Borderlands, you know, Catch a Ride, all of that.
Catch a Ride! No, that's the wrong
tone. He's also voiced by Mikey Newman, who is one of the creative leads at Gearbox. Does a lot of good stuff. I'm a fan of Mikey Newman. If anybody's interested in positive retrospectives on films, check out Movies with Mikey on YouTube.
Oh,
very good series.
Movies with Mikey.
Yeah,
oh.
that's Movies with Mikey. That's cool. Who that is. Mikey does not have a C. He is frustrated by the fact that Google auto-corrects it to that. From what I hear as well from other people who have spoken about Mikey Newman, he's also just like a lovely dude.
Cool.
So anyway, that's me gushing about someone I'm a fan of.
That's fine.
He voices Scooter.
We've been gushing about characters for the last 10 minutes.
he voices Scooter in this, and he does very well in that role. Scooter appears in Borderlands 2, and one of the jokes that is relatively reoccurring in the main Borderlands series is that Scooter's parents, I think, are siblings, so he's the product of incest.
Yeah.
And that's very much a joke. It's not a joke I'm super comfortable with, because that people who are the product of who do have parents who are family members exist in the world.
It's not really a joke, is
yeah
it?
Those people don't deserve any lack of respect, you know. And that character trait of his, which is, like I said, leaned on kind of heavily in the main games, doesn't come up at all in Tales from the Borderlands. So Scooter's portrayal in this is not one of an idiot who's an idiot because his parents are related. He is a lovable doofus who is
and eccentric, even.
Yeah, eccentric. He's got a big crush on Fiona, and that's kind of adorable, but her disinterest is completely reasonable and also kind of funny. Like, it's just a very it's a much more respectful, I think, interpretation of that character.
And it shows a bit of scope too.
Yeah.
Because like, he is a successful business person who runs numerous outlets over Pandora and is like well known.
Mm.
Like, it's, you know, and like setting up deals, like he's accomplished, and he's not really made fun of.
Yeah, in that way, like even for being dumb, he's not really made fun of for that. The person who's probably, I think that one of the ways that they do humor is most characters end up kind of embarrassing themselves if that's done in the source of comedy. And I think
Reese,
yeah. So you've got your main characters and they embarrass themselves because of, like, you know, Reese, as you said, is just kind of, he puts his foot in his mouth a lot and stuff like that. The one person I think who is the most like, as far as mocking their personality is concerned, is Vasquez, right? And Vasquez is a fucking prick. Like, I think he's got that hyper-masculine kind of, eat a dick, ball weed, and all of that kind of thing. And
very business douche.
Yeah, very, very business douche. And he I think, is the character who is the most, we're the most, quote, mean to in the humor of the game.
Yeah.
But I think that that's the worst it gets. And
yeah,
I think that
really,
all of the things that people mock Vasquez for is totally fine because he's a huge prick. Like, a person in the world like that would be a horrible person.
Yeah,
you know?
He's a jerk. He is a jerk.
Yeah, he's the absolute jerk.
So you don't feel too bad that people are mean to him because he's really just a jerk. I don't know. Does that make it okay?
Yeah.
People aren't that mean to him, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that, like, as far as the game mocking him, like the comedy of the game being leveraged against him, that he's the butt of that joke.
Sure.
So the other character that is probably worth mentioning is Handsome Jack, who appears in this game. That's a massive spoiler, by the way. But Handsome
Surprise!
Jack appears as an AI version of himself that kind of got, you know, as a backup plan type thing that gets loaded into Reese's head.
Plot stuff from other Borderlands games. It's not really that important.
It's not super important. But Jack shows up here, and once again, I felt like Jack was interesting when I was playing Borderlands 2.
Yeah.
But I played Borderlands 2 after playing this, so I don't know how well they really characterized him in Borderlands 2.
In Borderlands 2, he's just fine. He's just like this maniacal lunatic who wants to kill you.
Yeah, who thinks he's the good guy.
Really eccentric,
yeah.
He thinks he's a good guy.
And I think that in this, they're able to take that so much further because they just have so much more room to play with that character.
Yeah, and also the fact that he's an incorporeal AI hologram
that
puts him in a situation that I don't think he's used to.
Yeah, this is going to sound like unfortunate language, but I use this language quite specifically. He's kind of neutered in that situation, and that affects him, I think, in a way that he tries to play off, but he is somewhat impotent in what he's able to do to change the world. I use that the literal meaning of the word impotent there, but that plays with Jack's perception of himself, right? Yeah. You get a lot of opportunities to interact with him, and Reese is, being an employee of Hyperion, there's a lot of play that they have against each other or with each other. Like, you can decide whether or not Reese kind of idolizes Jack or despises him. Reese, in some ways, aspires to be in a position similar to what Jack was, but not necessarily to be that exact person.
Yeah, Telltale does that great thing where it kind of sets it up a bit vaguely, and then through the choices of the characters, lets you kind of paint in the gap.
Yeah.
Which I feel like they do the best. They do it really well. And so, yeah, you can make it a bit weird, or you can make it this way or that way or whatever. And yeah, so...
The choices that you have with Jack as Reese, they play into some of the weird themes. Again, surprising themes that I didn't expect to be in this game. So one of the really interesting themes they play with is this idea of subjectivity. This isn't new to this one. This is done in Borderlands 2, because Jack in Borderlands 2 thinks he's the good guy. He thinks he's saving the planet by doing what he's doing. But from your perspective as one of the Vault Hunters, and from the perspective of some of the characters from the first game, he's a tyrannical psychopath, basically.
From the perspective of anybody who isn't a robot, he's a lunatic.
Yeah, basically. And he's very, very murdery.
And
Oh, damn it. Now, you've said... I had it.
I want to say megalomaniac. But
megalomaniacal? That's not it.
I don't know if that's actually
megalomaniacal.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. Megalomaniacal is how that word is pronounced.
That's the word to describe him.
Yes, he is megalomaniacal.
Let's stop saying words bad.
But Jack is a fucking fascinating character for a game of this type, because it's a game that's unapologetically violent. It's unapologetically over the top. It's like Mad Max, but if Mad Max thought it was silly rather than being quite serious, you know?
Very serious.
And you have this character that is the villain of the piece, and normally you have kick the dog moments and all that kind of stuff that very unambiguously paint them as the enemy, and those do exist in this. But they still come back to this idea that really you... Not so much in Tales from Borderlands, because you're not a murderer. You don't really kill that many people. But, like, the Vault Hunters that you have, you know, like... Or characters
Zero
that interact with
the
Vault... Zero is a great example. He kills a lot of people because he wants money.
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Or guns.
And, sure, they don't kill civilians, but...
Yeah.
There's a lot of people...
a lot of murder.
Yeah, for loots.
Yeah.
So... I find it very interesting that in this game of all games, they talk about that. They come up to you and they have this idea that maybe, you know, in Jack's story, he is the protagonist. Yep. And in your story, you are the protagonist. And in Zero's story, Zero is the protagonist. And they play with that very interestingly in this game, because you play as Fiona and Reese, and you see things from different perspectives of each of those characters.
And the stories overlap.
The stories overlap and interact, and a lot of time you are in the same place. But especially as the game progresses, there are a lot of gaps that one character didn't know about the other. And it's all done in the In Medias Res thing, where like they're actually telling the story to someone else after the fact. Used very, very well. They blame each other for things, and you find out more context about it. It's really, really interesting. So this idea that, like, you know, everyone's the protagonist of their own story is explored in this, and Jack is probably the biggest example of that.
Yeah, not something I was expecting in a Borderlands game. I was expecting guns and explosions and vaults, but it was nice.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole thing between Jack and Reese towards the end where, like, big spoilers, Reese is trapped on Hyperion, Jack is in the station itself, and to escape the station, not be killed by Jack, he destroys it. And so the station crashes into Earth.
Crashes into Pandora.
Oh, Pandora. Crashes into Pandora. And you're doing all of that in the heat of the moment. You're quite desperate. And you find that even though the station crashed, there is a computer that Jack is still on, and you and he are talking about what you just did. And he's like, "You think I'm a monster? How many people were on this station when you crashed it?" And I'm sitting here, it's like, this is a game about shooting people and blowing shit up and, like, just violence, violence, violence all the time. And they're sitting here and saying, you're a murderer. And like, it's not done in a it is done in a jarring way, but it's not done in an unaware way. Like, it's very, very conscious of all of this stuff, and it's presenting these questions to you, like, why are you the good guy?
Yeah, there's no suggestion of moral superiority by any of the characters. Jack doesn't pretend to be, in that moment, pretend he hasn't done horrible things.
Yeah.
And he just kind of points it out to you that you've done horrible things and you probably will continue to.
And you have these rationalizations that you can say to Jack, and, you know, most of the time he might say something like, I'm going to do this differently, or I did what I had to do to survive. And he will just say straight back to you, that's what I told myself.
Yeah. I think he says that regardless of what you do.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, you have this option to, he asks you what you would do if you were the president of Hyperion, and you can say, I would make Pandora better. And he was like, yeah, man, me too.
Sounds familiar. And it's funny that they use Reese as a parallel to Jack as a fan, like an idolization, like someone who looks up to Jack too, to put that person in that position as well.
Yeah.
And make them look at their hero, sort of hero, kind of hero, and then they're acting themselves, they're out. The parallels are just very interesting to
watch play out. They do a lot of stuff with that. And it's something that I get, like you said, right back at the start of the podcast, you can't really do that in a shooter the same way that you can do it here.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I imagine there's ways to do it. You just got to kind of build in a bit more.
You definitely can, but I think it's going to be a lot simpler, and it's going to be, you just have so much less like real estate to, you have less time to talk about this kind of stuff.
I'm really interested in thinking about different ways that games with shooting mechanics can, because I love shooting. I love the shooting mechanics. I'm a big fan of even just the most basic of games, right? And that loop. I would like it to be attached to more interesting things.
Yeah, we've talked about the difference, but like games as toys for fun, which is great,
yes,
and games as more substantial kind of art.
Yes.
I can only think of one shooter I've played that fits into the substantial art category more than it fits into the fun toy category. And so I think that it always is going to be kind of limited to what you can do with that, even if it's just a matter of time dedication. But yeah, I think that shooters are going to continue to evolve.
Yeah, it's true.
Do you want to go to the sad zone?
Yeah, let's go to the sad zone. This feels appropriate. Okay, so let's explain the sad zone. We love this game. I think that's
clearly
love this game. Totally recommend it. But there's just some things, there's little niggles, little kind of things here and there.
Basically, the sad zone is where we talk about what we didn't really like or what didn't really work.
Yeah.
So why don't you hit us off with our first sad zone item?
Right. So one of the things people say about Telltale games, I mean, something that people say about a lot of games, is like, oh, what are they? They're not games. Oh, you know, you don't really do stuff. Oh, the action's not that fun. This X, Y, Z. Like, you know, oh, the fights are like QuickTime events.
I think that it only isn't called a walking simulator because you don't spend a lot of time manually walking.
That's true.
But it is
very one way to get around it.
It has been accused of being basically a movie and all of that kind of thing.
I'm not scoffing at that. Like, I'm not saying that, like, oh, yeah, so what is it? Like, what worth does it have? It's just moments when I was playing this game personally, and I think that some other people do agree, where I was kind of like, boy, I wish this was an interactive movie.
Yeah.
Or a TV show.
We talked about this a little bit at the start before we recorded. And I think because this isn't something I really personally feel about the game. I feel like the action sequences and stuff that are there serve, if nothing else, a pacing purpose.
Sure.
But you did make a very interesting point that they aren't really consequential.
Yeah.
And that's, I think very interesting because you have such an imbuement of consequence in the dialogue options you choose. It feels very... It can feel kind of pointless when it's like, now I'm playing Guitar Hero.
It just feels a bit hollow sometimes.
Yeah.
I get a bit frustrated. And there's multiple reasons. I think when we talk about Tales from the Borderland, there are two interfacing moments. There's choosing dialogue and there are the action sequences. I find I have a little bit of fiddly problems with both of them.
Mm.
To me, on the computer, using a mouse, choosing the dialogue options was very clunky. Because I personally had a lot of floaty mouse issues, and I always kind of do with these Telltale games.
I've definitely had that in the past. I think I'm just practiced enough now that it doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
But other games that they've produced, I completely agree with you.
And then that gets exasperated when it has a very quick timer. on dialogue options. So that is frustrating for me.
Yeah.
Because talking always feels like a mind action connection. It's just something instantaneous.
Mm.
And then when the interface feels just a bit wonky,
yeah.
For me, it breaks this flow.
There's also the point to be made that, like, see, I quite like the timers and I like the pressure of the timer because I'm getting more and more into the idea of, like, I want to do what I would do. I don't want to overthink it. I don't want to rewind and remake my decisions. I like the idea of playing once and just seeing how it all unfolds. And the timer grants me that pressure to be reactionary. Because if I didn't have that timer, I would jump on it. So that's something I like about it. But I also do understand that if you are struggling with the mouse and if you are struggling to read all of the options in time.
Also, it's easy for me, the one person sitting in front of a screen, to interface. But when, to me, the Telltale games are kind of great games to play with someone else.
Yeah.
True. The two of you to sit there together and have this shared experience and make decisions.
Yeah.
And that can be tough when you got a timer suddenly appear.
Do you know what feature is in the newest one?
What?
You have like group play where you can use your phones and each of you vote on the on what
this
you
was
say.
Exactly like what I was really just, I really just wanted some sort of easy interface, touch screen. And admittedly, you could always technically hit pause. Borderlands, and I think all the Telltale games now, you hit space, it pauses the game.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just being a bit of a whinger, which is why this is in the sad zone. But it just feels like they could have given a little bit more leeway.
Mm.
They just could have done a little bit more.
Something that you said that I think is very fair is there's no reason this can't be a menu option. There's no reason you can't just go to the menu and say turn off timers. And there are some people, maybe you can, I didn't actually check the options menu.
There's not.
There are some people who have language difficulties or people who have, you know, issues with their eyesight and stuff that would make adhering to that timer harder.
The text is like very
stylized.
I feel like when I look at it, I'm not sure personally, but people with dyslexia, for example, might struggle with it because of the fonts, you know.
Even people who have colorblindness might struggle with some of it. You know what I mean?
A great point. These games, actually, I don't think they have colorblind options.
Maybe they're just designed with colorblind people in mind from the ground up.
Hopefully.
I don't know enough about the common types of colorblindness.
You get into a bit of niche stuff, but I feel like it just removes... I always love seeing more accessibility options in games, regardless of why they're there. And it just feels this interface is a bit funky.
Yeah, because, I mean, even just reaction times, like some people have physical difficulties with motor control and stuff that would make moving the mouse really quickly hard. It's also worth mentioning, on a controller, you don't have to move the mouse around. The four face buttons is tied to a dialogue option.
Yeah.
But for some reason, that's not the case on PC,
PC
so you
doesn't
have to use the mouse.
I swear they were numbered in the original, like in The Walking Dead.
But, yeah, in one of them, they might have been numbered.
But I don't know why they're not. But it's just really annoying. It always gets on my nerves sometimes. And I was always thinking, like, I would love to play this with someone. I feel like it's a bit of pressure.
Yeah.
And it kind of leans into my other problem, which is like, I'm someone who loves those weird little quick time kind of games, like where you mash buttons or you have to do actions. Like, I don't know. I feel like one of the only people who loves Heavy Rain and David Cage's Beyond Two Souls and those kind of weird action
those
games.
Those are both examples, though, where the quick time events do have story consequences.
That's true. But I always love the button combos and all the presses you have to go through. And like, as this like little mini, like the whole game is just quick time events. But I always love it. It's always fun. And not so much in those, but there are other games like Elite Beat Agents, I think, is one.
Yeah,
on the, which is a
good
DS
rhythm
game.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is like a rhythm game where you have to push buttons and move things in order. And it's interesting. And I just feel like the game component is a bit weak.
I don't think you'd find many people who disagree with that. My position is more that I think you're right. It is weak, especially when compared to some of those other things you've given. I think that it is strong enough, and I think that its purpose is different. Like I said, I think of it mainly as a pacing thing. Although now that you have brought that stuff up, I am honestly thinking, like, would it really be that bad for those to be consequential in some ways? Not like game-endingly, but like, maybe you wind up with a little bit less money in this section,
or a different path, or something like that. But honestly, people harp on difficulty modes a lot in games, but I kind of do like the idea of there being a story mode.
Yeah,
where you're just like, you just want the story. Story mode.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if these things were consequential or were harder, it would. This is. I don't want to tell game designers how hard their job is, but I feel with the, my understanding of how this stuff works, I did study this for 2 years. I'm not an expert. I don't think it would be that difficult if you wanted to raise the minimum bar of difficulty for these QuickTime events to institute a no-fail mode or a no QuickTime event mode required.
The reason why this really got on my nerves in Tales from the Borderland is right at the end, when you're doing that big fight scene, it has you input just the tiniest little bit more complicated sequences.
Yeah, yeah. I actually kind of struggled with some of them a little bit.
Oh, and see, for me, I was like, finally, something to do with the keyboard.
And they do have a narrative reason for that as well, which is fun. But I think you're right. One of the other things that this is such a nitpick, when you have to mash a button repeatedly, it's Q, which is on my left ring finger. Like, really? That, like, you didn't want me to mash E or F or the space bar or S or something? Like,
honestly, like, I think it's like in, it's like not actually, it's not actually timed. You could just take your time on it and it would be fine.
I set up macros, so I don't even do it. I push a button on my mouse and it solves it for me.
That's amazing. But see, here's the thing. It's like, they're all the same. They're all very samey.
Yeah.
And it repeats them. It's, oh, we need to do a strenuous thing. You hit Q and then E.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to dodge. You're left. You're right. And it just, I get it. Difficulty is an important thing to balance and you want something to be accessible, which I just talked about. But I just would have liked an option.
One thing as well that I feel like I'm sort of defending Telltale a little bit. I hope that doesn't sound too defensive.
But
again, having just played something that is 3 years later than this one, they also do the quick times much better in Guardians of the Galaxy. So, for example, when you're Star-Lord, it's left and right quick click for his two guns. But when you're Drax, you're using buttons on the keyboard that sort of feel a little bit more like he's doing big swings. And so far, there hasn't been a desperate mash on cue. So the quick time events are no more consequential and no more difficult, but they're less tedious and less samey.
All I'm saying is, like, there's a wealth of games out there that have interesting QuickTime events that are little tiny puzzle games, little touchpad games. Steal some of their good ideas.
Yeah.
Add some variety.
That's fair. Telltale, you've been around long enough that you're allowed to, you know, break from this mold.
I don't even know. Like, fundamentally, I felt pressured during dialogue situation and I felt like the gameplay was lacking.
Yeah.
Which is not...
It's interesting because you would consider the action sequences to be where the challenge is, but with the way you're describing it, you found the dialogue sections more difficult in a linear way.
Yeah.
And the action sequences kind of boring, which is sort of the inverse, I imagine, of what they're going for there. They want the action sequences to be exciting.
They're so forgiving with those action sequences. Like, you can push every other button before you push the right one, and I feel like it works.
There's so many points as well where you can click... You have something that feels like it should be an almost a reflex-based thing, but you have probably 4 or 5 seconds in which you can push the button. And so they are a lot easier than you'd think as well.
And the reason why I keep harping on it is, like, if it's not going to be an instant reflex, dodge left, dodge right, make it a little bit silly. Make it a little puzzle game. I don't know. Whatever. When we played Undertale and, like, the boss fights were, like, these weird, interesting little things, or... You play other games where they just do something a little bit different. When you're just doing the same actions again and again.
Yeah.
Again, that's why I kind of was just like, well, just like, let's not do it. Just,
yeah.
I don't mind. It's great. Characters are all entertaining. I'll play it. Visual novels are a whole genre of game where you just choose dialogue options or actions and no gameplay in giant quotation marks take place.
This is better though because of the change of pace.
Yeah, I just think there's more scope.
Yeah,
that's all.
And I think that's completely fair. One of my sad zone items is sound design, which I've played a fair few Telltale games, and I feel like this is often a problem that they have, where the sound, I don't know if it's sound mixing or sound editing or whatever, but basically the volume of stuff isn't where it should be. Like, in this, there's a whole bunch of gunfights that you're in, and you don't really feel like you're in danger because the sound of the gunfire is very tinny or very quiet. Certain music notes where, like, you know, big story moments where, like, Jack betrays you or something like that. Music is playing, but it's just kind of quieter than I feel like it should be to really land the gravitas of it.
There are multiple moments in this game where I couldn't hear characters because they're just too quiet.
Yeah.
And, like, environmental sounds are just drowning them out. And I'm just like, what's going on? I can't change that.
I feel like sound design is something that they've never really completely landed. It's not one of the most important things, but it is something that I consciously noticed as lacking even the first time I play a couple of these games. And so that's a real sad zone moment for me. The other thing too is I think that there are some visual and animation problems as well. Because this game took over a year to come out, I often forget that it was technically a 2014 game.
Oh, right.
And there's a lot of, like, datedness to the quality of the facial animations and stuff like this. This was long before Witcher 3 came out.
Yeah.
And the Witcher 3 fucking changed the game as far as in-dialogue procedural kind of animations go.
They did an amazing job.
And once again, Guardians of the Galaxy is a step above Tales from the Borderlands, but there are still little weird things people do with their eyebrows occasionally. For the most part, it is very good. But the one I really notice is the staticness of the camera in a lot of these dialogue sequences. The camera just feels very locked off and tripoded. Very basic kind of shot reverse shot in some places.
Yeah, I think in the last episode was the one I noticed it the most.
Yeah.
Because there's a chance to sort of change up your character roster.
Yeah, it's very, very what they're actually potentially dealing with there can be very random.
Yeah, I don't imagine it's very easy to do with like an organic system. But
the modularity of it is obvious. The steps they take to fit everyone in, there are shots that are wider than they would need to be if with the characters that you have.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh, wow, this camera is panned way back.
Yeah.
Who's shooting this?
The way they do group shots and stuff, you can tell that it's very modular. But it does work very well in other ways as well. I think that's part of what makes the intro sequences so refreshing as well, is because those are fully cinematic moments in the game, and so they have a lot of energy that the basic dialogue interactions don't. From a cinematography sort of perspective.
Man, we are not word people.
Like I said, though, this is sad zone stuff. These are noticeable, but they don't ultimately detract from the experience. What they do well is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And that, like, I feel like I'm a bit of a broken record, and I'm a very easy person to predict, but characterization and dialogue are one of the most important things for an experience for me at all. And they do this exceptionally well here. And just like I said, comedy in games is rare. Comedy done well and witty comedy is rare in games. And it's so fucking nice to see an excellent example of it.
I love it. It's great. Every moment there doesn't feel like a waste of time, which is what I always really care about. It's like just a beautiful 10-hour game to run through. And in a year, you do it again.
Yeah.
Like, I really just like, it's like, it always reminds me of just watching a season of a show I really like or visiting something I watched. I played this and I'm just like, I can't wait to introduce this game to someone and have them play through it and I get to sit on the couch and watch what they do.
You were talking about that multiplayer as well. Another sort of person hack, I guess you could do for multiplayer, is there are two playable characters, so each of you can control them when their moments come.
And this is why a controller is great, because it's really hard to throw a keyboard and mouse at someone.
I was very excited leading up to this episode, and the closer we got to it, the more I realized that I was less excited about the conversation we'd be able to have about this game, and more excited about just getting to play it again.
Yeah, if you want to play a gameplay-heavy experience, this is not a gameplay-heavy experience. But it is a great, funny story.
Yeah, I think of that as like a certain challenge-based games as that being a barrier to entry. This does not have that, right? So, like, if you have someone who is not a gamer, but kind of interested in seeing what games are about and what they can do, this is a great entry game for a lot of people, I would say.
I do think, it doesn't ask too much from people.
Yeah.
And it delivers.
And it's, like, because there's that idea of maturity as well. Like, this is a game that's very silly and very fun and very colorful, but clearly designed for adults, you know?
No, that's true.
Maybe, like, teenagers as well to some extent, but definitely not children.
Well, I think when something's designed for adults, it's shown that broad range of appeal.
There's a lot of jokes about sex and death and murder and drugs.
Now, obviously, I don't think children can watch this.
Yeah.
Right? But I think that still spreads from teenagers to adults.
Yeah, right? Like, you can engage with it on different levels.
And sure, maybe you don't find sex and death funny, but like, not all humor appeals to everybody.
Yeah,
and nor should it. But I do think it has a raw.
I think it has a sophistication of its humor.
That's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah, even though the humor is juvenile in terms of like flavor, the sophistication of the humor is very, very advanced. And it doesn't talk down to you, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It doesn't talk down to you. It isn't cheap humor. I think that it's a great way to introduce someone to games if you want them to see that games are fun and colorful and...
Funny. Interesting.
But also have substance and are intelligent without overburdening someone on their first experience. I think it's a really great entry game. It's
totally worth playing.
It's got to be really cheap by now, right? I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy was only like $30.
In all honesty, like, Telltale have always, in my opinion, reasonably priced their games.
I feel like they undercharge in some right in some places. Like, that's because I'm a huge fan, obviously, but I feel like their team is bigger than we like to think of them as at this point. I'm surprised that $30 is the...
They sell really well. They sell really well, and I think it's a lot of goodwill. And like they never charge like $100 for a game.
Yeah. No. Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's a conversation finished for Tales from the Borderlands.
Yes, indeed.
Why don't we talk about what's going to be happening over the next couple of weeks?
Oh, that's true. So because we're kind of doing like these weird season things. And because of my organizational brain in terms of days and months and the weeks and the year, we're kind of going to give ourselves like a break in between seasons.
Yeah.
In vague quotations. So normally a fortnight from now, there would be a new episode out, but not this time.
Yeah. So you'll have a one episode break.
That's a good way. That's a much better way to say it, David.
We're going to have a one episode break while we gear up for season two.
Yep.
We definitely plan to complete season two. We already have most of the games of season two planned.
We have a list. I want to work on it and change some things.
Yeah. But I'm saying we have another 12 games.
Oh, David. We have more than 12 games that we need to play.
One of the things that we said about this when we were looking through our initial list is like, oh man, you know, we might chew through this pretty quickly. But then, like, I was thinking, well, actually, it's going to be 6 months before the end of season one. Yep. And that will mean that games that were released just as we were starting the podcast are now kind of old enough for us to have, quote, missed them.
Let's be honest. We always kind of missed the conversation. That's why we're making a podcast. Let's bring the conversation back.
I don't want to make any promises because making promises is something that gets creative people
into trouble.
Into trouble because, quite frankly, it sucks to be told that something cool is happening and then you never get it. Like, I don't want to disappoint anyone, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Definitely.
We are thinking about other stuff that we can do, though. And that's part of the reason why we're taking this break, because we want to try and see if we can experiment with some stuff, see what else we can feasibly do. The main barrier to whether or not we're capable of doing something is whether or not we can dedicate the time to it.
Sure.
So we do appreciate your patience with this break, because it's about testing the waters with that stuff, but hopefully we will be able to learn something and see if we can deploy something cool and new.
Basically, I think the situation we're both kind of in is we have like all these ideas, but we just need time to do them.
Mm.
And we've somehow found the time to do this. Good Lord, right? And I just can't wait to hopefully have time to do some more things with some more of you.
So, keep your eyes on this space. We'll be communicating with you guys about that. The place to look for that kind of information would be our website at slowpokespodcast.com.
Totally.
We also have our Twitter account, which is at slowpokespast. I haven't been tweeting as much as I should lately, but I am trying...
You have been retweeting some interesting things, David.
Yeah, I am trying to at least retweet something once a day. But I do want to make sure that I'm, you know... pumping out the quality humor and getting the practice in and developing my Twitter skills.
True.
If you're interested in someone who's a lot kinder and a lot more welcoming, you can go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/slowpokespodcast. Yeah,
that is where I mostly realm. And I will hug and embrace you with my words.
Yeah, someone who's much better at embracing our audience and kind of keeping things interesting and positive. I'm a lot more snark-based, I would say.
Yes, David is fueled on snark, whereas I'm actually a cuddly boil of joy.
So, that's all of that. Now, we do have our next game.
Oh, yeah.
No. For the episode one of what we're thinking of a season two. It'll be released as episode 13. We're not going to fuck around with deploying that. John? Why don't you tell people what our next game is going
to
be?
So the next game to bring us back is Until Dawn.
It's called Until Dawn. That's the name of the game.
God, man.
This is a game that you've been talking about playing excitedly and enthusiastically for like 6+ months. Oh. And we get to the point where I finally let you tell people and you forget the name of the fucking game.
Could you see the fear in my eyes
Is Until Sound. Wait, what?
I'm looking down. Yeah. Oh, man. Until Dawn, though. I kind of have this fascination with horror.
Yeah.
And horror films and horror games. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening there in terms of games. And we played Soma, for example. Mm. I've heard a lot of people talk about Until Dawn as like the teen horror movie game.
Yeah, it's apparently very self-aware. Apparently, it understands its own tropes and it plays not necessarily for comedy, but certainly for an audience that's like that knows that kind of stuff.
Totally.
I'm looking forward to a kind of a very pulpy, fun experience. And yes. John, you want to do the cool reveal that we might be doing for this?
Yeah. So we're thinking, because neither of us have played this game, we're gonna play it together in the same room.
As co-op friends,
and we might, you know,
what we're planning on doing there is just passing the controller back and forth and actually playing that in the same room.
Yep.
Having a bit of fun with that. So that's again part of the reason why we need the extra time for the next episode. We thought that would be a cool idea that like you'll control four characters, I'll control four characters, yep, and we all just have to kind of live with the choices of the other player.
Why are you looking at me like that, David? I make great choices.
I was more talking... That was more of a look of sinister malice, John. I think that it might have been difficult to see under the pop filter here.
I'm very concerned that you don't get any of the jerk characters.
My schadenfreude is swelling. Okay. So that'll be a lot of fun. We're also thinking of having us record that and potentially release that as a bonus podcast episode or as a Let's Play.
Or as both.
There's no reason it can't be both. We're not exactly sure what the best format for that would be. Yep. So, again, this is all about us testing the waters. We don't want to make any promises.
Totally.
So, yep. Hopefully we'll be able to do something cool there.
Yeah, we'll sit down. We'll get together. We'll play. We'll record. We'll see what it looks like. We'll see how it goes. Yeah,
because maybe it's just garbage.
Yeah, we're just super boring.
Yeah, maybe we are not good at Mystery Science Theatering 3000.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Wow. I just realized it because that just got re-released, didn't it? This is going to look like a huge ripoff.
No, it's not. Let's Plays have been a thing for years, David.
I don't know. I feel like this one's very movie-like.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
And our flavor is not going to be screaming at the horror like PewDiePie or any of the other racist Let's Players.
When have we ever been relevant?
that's a good point. Hey, I couldn't have ripped this off. I'm not cool enough.
But it's going to be fun. Hopefully, you know, we have a great time.
Find us on iTunes.
Yep. Look forward to everything that's coming. Hope you all have a great time. And we'll see you next season. Arbitrary seasons.
Thanks again for making the Slowpokes what it is.